talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Yeah, interesting the question you brought up there, Blankers. 713-780-ESPN. The fact that Laremy Tunsil and Malik Collins, two veterans who are not there yesterday for the off-season workout, it is voluntary, but it is their job, and the Texans did make a commitment to both of those guys, keeping Laremy Tunsil around. It was almost like a player coming back for his senior season, the way that they handled that. Like, Laremy Tunsil is back! With the same contract that he's got. Like, that was weird how they handled that whole deal. And then Malik Collins, who got a deal in the offseason. Two veterans, not at the optional team activities. I find that to be pretty bizarre myself.
It bothers me. It really does. And it's going on across the league. Look, nothing bothers me more than Aaron Rodgers, who got everything he wanted, got all of his money, got all of the payments and everything that was on his checklist, and then he skips the voluntary camp when he's got a brand-new receiver in tow that they got in the draft. When it's hyper important that since he wants another Super Bowl, since all the things he wants is exactly what they're trying to give him, but they need him to be a part of it, and he skips. And you see everybody focused on Tunsil, and rightly so. This is a guy that had issues even going to practice a year ago, but yet they extended. So the more the team seems to do for these guys, the more they feel like, but you know what, it's my vacation time, and I'm not cutting it short for anybody or anything. Then where are your priorities? Because without... You're lucky you have the contracts you have for the length that you have them. Otherwise, things would be a whole lot different for you probably throughout your day, let alone your career. But yet, once you get everything you want, the way you show your appreciation is you don't show up.
It also, like, it doesn't strike me as the culture that the Texans are trying to build. And I know sometimes the culture for the Texans can be mocked. I know that it's synonymous with Jack Easterby. I do think it's important. I think it's value to, you know, have a culture and something that you want to, you know, hang your hat on, right? The pillars of the philosophy of the organization. The Texans committed to Laremy Tunsil. Now, maybe it's because the market wasn't that hot for Laremy Tunsil. I think that that's certainly plausible. But then on the Malik Collins side, he signed a two-year, $17 million deal in the offseason. $8.5 million guaranteed. Like, be around the teammates. It doesn't strike me as the Texans culture that they're trying to build.
But think about it too, Jeremy, from the standpoint of, even with that being said, and you got your money and they took care of you, the offensive line is such a focus that they took a first round, they used one of their first round picks on bolstering it and adding to it. If you don't want to be a casualty that's gone because you're not culturally on board with what they're doing, and you want to be a part of this solidification of the offensive line, be there. Be in person. Start building the chemistry now. Start building the roles out now. Start working on where you need to be now, and show that you're committed for not only now, but for the long haul. By getting what you want and then not showing up, but then trying to look at it and say, I should be a part of that offensive line, and also earning the money that they just gave you, it doesn't send a very good message. It's one thing if you're Tunsil and you've been considered one of the top five linemen in the league, and yet you still have question marks about him. But it's another guy that just finally got a payday that he was looking for, and he pays off the team by saying, yeah, I'm good. I'll be there when I have to be.
Hive, what are your thoughts on Tunsil and Collins not being at voluntary minicamp? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. My opinion of this is, if Cody Stoots is there, Malik Collins and Laremy Tunsil should be there. Stoots, he's got 11 observations. You can check it out at sportsmap.com. If he's there, darn it, Laremy Tunsil, Malik Collins should be there too.
I mean, Brandon Cooks is there, and he's talking about how important the reps are. And he's talking about, sure, he's still got his kids there, and he can make it a family-type environment. But you know what? He's putting the work in. And so everybody appreciates him. And then when you start talking about that word culture, that's a big culture boost for the whole locker room. It's a bad look when they say 90-plus percent of the guys are here, but the guys that aren't are going to play a significant role in a very significant position group on this team.
Yeah, it's my stance too. 713-780-ESPN. One of the other things that Mueller said when he joined us just now was, develop Davis Mills. And look, the Texans are going down that route. I mean, they're giving him first-team snaps. He's going to be the, you know, he's QB1 of this team. He's undisputed QB1 of this team. There's not the competition. He's got the comfort of knowing that he's the guy. He's got the comfort of knowing, you know, Pep Hamilton, who was around him last year as his quarterback coach, who has good success with quarterbacks. Justin Herbert, the most recent, worked with Andrew Luck as well. So that is good. Now, one thing that Randy mentioned that I'm curious your opinion on, because I'm not sure that I agree, where he said that, you know, it's the same offense. It's the same playbook. Like, I'm not 100% sure that's accurate going from Tim Kelly to Pep Hamilton, that it's going to be just like another year of continuity. I think there's going to be changes there.
I totally agree, but I'm also thinking about when he said that, the minute he said it was, I hope there were chapters that were unread. I hope there were tons of plays in the playbook that Tim Kelly just refused to use, because in my mind, this is not only a prove-it year for Davis Mills, this is a prove-it year for Pep Hamilton. This is Pep Hamilton's chance to show everybody, I'm just not a quarterback whisperer. I'm a guy that could be a quality offensive coordinator in this league. And when given the reins and the entire playbook to put into play, I can do what's necessary to be a big-time coordinator in this league. And so I believe that there's going to be plenty of new wrinkles. There's going to be plenty of new plays. I think there's a whole new philosophy that's going to be on display every single time this team takes the field. And I'm excited for it. It's not just to gauge and to judge and to evaluate Davis Mills. It's to do the exact same thing with Pep Hamilton, looking at a guy that's not afraid to open up the playbook, take some chances, and do some things differently than Tim Kelly and Bill O'Brien used to do.
Yeah, I think that, look, I think it could be positive, but I do think there is going to be a slight learning curve there. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think it's completely learning a new playbook and a new system. I think it's like a half one, right? Like, it's a half measure. But there are some things that he's going to have to pick up on. Now, the good thing is he's going to get all the snaps. This is his team, which I believe is a good thing. One thing that I find funny, because, look, everybody craves football. We know that. I mean, football is king in this state. We know that that's very important. We know that the Houston Texans are the NFL team in this city. One of the things, though, that I find funny from, like, these OTAs and these off-season voluntary OTAs are the amount of hot takes that come out from shorts and T-shirts.
Yeah.
Like, Derek Stingley's going to be an all-pro because he's defending Chris Conley well as they're going at 50% speed. Like, that is funny to me.
But also, Jeremy, take it from both sides of the equation. So there's that one, and there's the other one of great concern about who they drafted because he's not out there participating fully during a voluntary camp in May. I don't give a rat's ass what Stingley does in May. If it becomes an issue in training camp, if it becomes an issue that looks like it's going to prevent him from being on the field for snaps when they count, then I'll start worrying about it. What he does, coming off what he had, doing what he's done in the past, I don't give 1 ounce of concern to how much he's practicing this week.
He locked up Chris Conley, man. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. Baby.
Chris Conley, wasn't he the guy on MTV? That moved on to do, like, special features for ESPN?
Yeah, that's him. That's exactly that same guy. Yeah, that's
I mean,
the guy.
He's tough to lock down, that guy. I mean, he bounces around. Receiver.
Now, look, we watch the videos and we pay attention to it. I actually think Derek Stingley looks pretty healthy for 50% speed, you know, and wearing shirts and T-shirts.
Did we see him limping? Did we see him in the medical tent? Did we see him
working? Returning punts?
Yeah.
Or he was catching punts, we should say. He wasn't returning them. He was catching punts.
Again, miss me with all of the forced panic that he's not a full participant in a voluntary minicamp. He's there, he's under contract, and he looks healthy. Let's just wait till camp opens before we really, truly have issues that we have to be concerned with.
Look, we're having fun with this, but Stoops does a really good job covering the Texans, and you should check out his 11 observations on sportsmap.com. I want to see how they move the needle for you. Max Sharping looks sharp, in phenomenal shape. Former second-rounder.
I heard
rounder,
Cody say that, yeah.
He's been a disappointment. How much does it move the needle for you that Max Sharping looks sharp and that he's in phenomenal shape, that Max Sharping?
Here's where it matters, Jeremy. It's simply what we've been talking about previously with other guys, in the fact that he cares. He cares enough to take his offseason, and whether he listens to the media hype or he has his agent or someone in his ear saying, with a contract coming up, it's time to put up or shut up. There's no leeway anymore. So he gets himself in tip-top physical condition. He gets stronger. He gets more defined. He cuts some body fat, and he realizes, again, much like the guys we're talking about that seemingly don't care that much about trying to construct this new offensive line, he realizes, if I want to be a part of this offensive line, if I want to show that I belong with this franchise and I want to get my next contract, I better get my ass in shape, and I better show them from the first time I show up at NRG Stadium that I mean business, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to be a part of this and make some money. Good for him.
It sounds to me like that moved the needle to about a 10 for you.
I liked it a lot. Well, but again, it's like, and I listen to my man Lance Zierlein a lot, but I also use it as it relates to the game that I knew best over the years in basketball. You need a guy that the game means something too. It's not just a job that pays the bills, that makes you more money than, and I always use the Kelvin Cato example, but Tunsil seems to be the same kind of guy. I don't really love football. I love the fact that it's making me $22 million a year. And I like the guys, and I want the guys on my team that, sure, the money matters, but at the end of the day, they love this game, and they're going to give everything to it to be the best they can be at it until it's time to walk away from it. And that's what I'm liking about what I hear about a guy like Sharping.
That moved the blank needle. That's cool. I like that. So, yeah, I mean, let's be honest. Sharping's probably a backup guard on this team, barring injury, with Khan and then Kenyon Green, who was drafted. Charlie Heck, because Laremy Tunsil's missing. He's not around for the team that's paying him a lot of money. Charlie Heck saw snaps at left tackle. Is that moving the blank needle?
No, except for the fact that he's shown. This is where we're going to talk about versatility. I like the fact that he has some versatility, but as a guy that they drafted and they brought in, and they didn't know what they were going to get, they're getting a guy that can be serviceable. And that's what you need, because you conceivably, as long as Tunsil doesn't get hurt, that's his job. But the other thing that says even more of a message to me, Jeremy, is the fact that they're going to do what I've asked them to do, what you and I are on the same page with. They're going to put Tytus Howard on the right side and leave him there. And if you put him there and leave him there so that he can be the best right tackle, that he could be, that's a whole lot better of a situation than playing musical chairs for another year with a guy that you got to make another tough decision on in another 12 months' time.
I like this bit we're doing. Let's see if other things might move the blank needle. Also, when we come back, is there cause for pause in the Texans rebuild? That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Be like me and take the day off work and play a fun round of golf with your favorite sports station at the ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 Occasional Invitational presented by SiteJab.com, benefiting Kids Mills. This year's tournament will take place Tuesday, June 14th at 10:30 a.m. Wildcat Golf Club. Each golfer we'll receive some brews from Carbach, lunch from Mendocino Farms, dinner, that's great, 18 holes of golf, and, of course, an award ceremony immediately after the tournament. Register now at ESPN975.com. So Stutes had our guy Mike Fairmeltzer in last Friday, mm-hmm. and they were talking about the Texans' rebuild, and they posed the question, is it time to cause for pause about this Texans' rebuild? Because, you know, I think Caserio's overall approval rating is very good. He sounds smart. He knows football. He knows the players. Like, he, at the very least, sounds educated. And, look, it wasn't a great bar that he had to surpass, replacing, you know, the Bill O'Brien, the Parliament of General Managers that you had. Easterby even took a shot at it, which, how frightening is that, that's what the organization was once upon a time. But do you think that the rebuild for the Texans, don't tell that to Nick Caserio, he hates using that word for whatever reason, is there cause for pause with the direction that Caserio is taking this organization?
I don't think so at all. I think so far I've been pleasantly surprised by the move that Nick Caserio has made. I said that going into this offseason, there were going to be a couple of different barometers that I would use to gauge the performance of our general manager, and I think the trade of Deshaun Watson is one of them. I think that the draft is another one of them. How he's handling free agency and the fact that he's not looking for fighting Rex Burkheads as much anymore is another one of them. So when you look at all those things, that starts to kind of get you in a position where you are more of a believer than someone that's going to question trading sixth and seventh round draft picks that never see the field and doing some of the other things that he's done previously that have caused us to pause a little bit. When I look at everything that he's done, the way he handled the draft, whether you like or dislike trading up a little bit to get a player here or there that he liked more than others, I like the draft picks that he got. I like the fact that he got better as a roster. I like the fact that he's making decisive decisions. He got out from under the Deshaun Watson situation, and as we heard Randy Mueller add on to what we've already said and what we've heard from Josiah Anderson and other people, this could be a bigger deal, and Deshaun could play less and less and be suspended more and more as this thing weighs on. The fact that if he hung on too long to Watson or didn't get what he got, that this could have been far worse for this franchise. There's no reason to have cause to pause anything right now. I like everything that he's done in the last 6 months.
I agree with almost everything that you said. I like where the direction of this organization's going. I think that Nick Caserio has done a good job. I like the fact that he's not overspending yet in free agency to sign a bunch of, you know, mediocre middle-aged free agents that really aren't going to help you that much. Maybe you win a couple extra games, so now you get to six in 2022 if you sign a few more Fighting Rex Burkheads. So I like that. I do like that he's going with the youth movement, and he's going to let those guys play. He's going to let those guys get the reps, even if it sacrifices a game or two in 2022. I think that's overall good for the betterment of the organization. Now, I don't believe Caserio has done the hard work, though, right? Like, we consider this a rebuild. Nick Caserio does not. It's a remodel of the organization. What's the easiest part if you're rebuilding a home or you're renovating a home or you're remodeling a home? It's the demo, right? Mm-hmm. It's very easy to go in there and yank out the cabinets. It's really easy to, you know, take down a wall. The difficult part comes when you rebuild it and you start to, you know, put your master plan together. So it's very easy to trade away or release some of the cap casualties. I think it was easy to make the Deshaun Watson trade. Like, his timing of it was good. It's good that he didn't, you know, freak out on the November 2nd trade deadline. But he had 13 teams interested in Deshaun Watson that all would have given him three first-rounders.
But hear me out on that, because you're right, to an extent. But also the fact that because of that no-trade clause, it could have gotten very tricky with your hands tied, where as a general manager, you were just at the mercy of the player and his agent. The way he handled it by talking to each of these teams and letting them know what he would take before it went on to the next part of the process and being involved when he quite easily could have been eliminated from being involved by Watson and his agent and got to a point where he knew what he was going to get from each team, I give him credit for that.
No, I do too. I don't think we're that far apart on that. Like, it's not a disagreement, but I also don't feel like it was all that difficult. Did he manage it well? Yeah, he managed it well. I think you could have managed it well. I think I could have managed it well. As long as you don't, like, you know, basically threaten the guy, you're going to be able to trade Deshaun Watson for three first-rounders. Like, I don't think that that was a very difficult thing to do. The degree of difficulty to trade Deshaun Watson, who was obviously very coveted around the NFL, was not a difficult thing to do. So, again, I like where the organization is going. I like that he is, you know, his philosophy on things. I like Nick Caserio. I've been, you know, talked about with liking Nick Caserio more than you do. So, like, I like all that part. I just don't feel like the degree of difficulty and the hard things that, you know, need to be done for a general manager, I feel like those are, like, coming along down the pike, right? Where he's going to have to, once this team starts winning again, manage the cap a little bit better than just basically, you know, releasing or trading guys that are cap casualties. How, whenever you have, you know, a quarterback decision to make in 2023, I think the difficult decisions are coming. And let's not act like Nick Caserio hasn't been flawed either. He hired David Culley, although I give him a benefit of the doubt on that because I don't think he was actually trying to hire a good head coach. I think he was trying to hire a bridge head coach, and it was just so laughably bad that he had to get rid of him after one season. I don't love all the trades he's made. I think he's lost more than he's won. Overall, I like where Casario's at, but I'm not ready to put him, like, in the top 10 GMs in all of the NFL.
Well, let's pat the brakes. Look, there's a big difference between, you know, cause for pause and anointing him one of the top 10 best general managers in the league. I think that it's easy to say he could be a failure right now. He could be having Jack Easter be involved in a lot of different things. He could have continued to parlay what he didn't do right. And like you said, overextending his reach of trying to get a bridge coach. There was a lot of things that were negatives that could have been exploded into even more negatives as it relates to subsequent moves.
Sure.
But there's a fine line between that and saying, oh, well, he's a top 10 general manager in this league. Look, he's getting his feet wet. He's starting to get out of the wading pool, and he's starting to actually swim laps. Now, you're right in the fact that we'll see how good these draft picks turn out to be. On paper and the way that he constructed the young players that he's bringing into this program look to be, like, players that can help, look to be guys that are going to upgrade the level that we feel this roster's at. So I'm not I just want to be clear in the fact that there's a big difference between a top 10 general manager and a guy that's not drowning and trying to tread water.
No, and I think we're pretty much on the same page, to be honest, when it comes to Nick Caserio. I just feel like the job that he's done so far, yeah, I give him points for the job he's done so far. I think he's done a good job. I like the direction of the organization. The nitpicky stuff that, you know, we wish he would have done slightly better, I don't think matters a ton. Like, I don't think it's a net positive that much more. I just feel like this has been the easy part of the job.
Make
the
it
demo,
easy.
The breakdown.
Make it easy. In your scale, are you giving him a passing grade or a failing grade? And I don't mean by giving him a D to pass. I give him a
C.
I'm going to give him a B. Just probably a solid B right now, simply because I don't know what these draft picks are going to be, as good as
sure.
they look.
look, I'm right there too, but to me, that's not the conversation. Like, the conversation isn't grade Caserio to the job he's done right now, because I think he has done a good job. I'm with you, same grade. Like, we think of the same of him so far. I'm just saying, like, in the overall construction of building the Houston Texans back to a playoff-caliber team, the first couple of years is the easy part. Trading a Deshaun Watson that everybody wants is easy. Getting rid of bad contracts is easy. Like, I need to see the master plan play out. I think the difficult conversations and the difficult discussions are going to be the ones that play out in the next 3 to 4 seasons.
But did he do anything to give you, as you referred to with Cody and Mike? No, well, yeah, sure. I'm talking about just as it relates to the rebuild going forward. Once you got out of, whether it was, again, a lot of times fluky things happen that just work out in your best interest, whether you had a say-so in it or not, like you're getting Lovie Smith over some of the guys you were considering, like some of the ways that things were handled to get some of the players that he brought in previous or during, like you said, the Watson trade, you were going to get 3 first rounds no matter what. But you also had to weigh in the other variables I brought into it in terms
sure,
of getting
That's
it from
fair.
The team. But I think in terms of the rebuild, right now, I like the direction this team's going. And I couldn't say that a year ago. I like the fact that the future seems bright because of the multitude of picks they still have to use, the fact that they have young players to develop now, they have faces that you can actually get behind, like bringing a Kenyon Green into the studio and finding out he's a good kid, he seems like he's a good football player, and he's a guy that I can easily root for, as opposed to some of the things they've been through in the past with guys that didn't want to be here. So I think that culturally, I think that roster-wise, and I think that transaction-wise, the way he's gone about his business so far, because I feel as positive as I felt about this team in a long time, I feel like he's doing his job, and I feel like there's no reason to pause the rebuild.
Agree, but that's phase one.
Yes,
and to me, the hard part is phase two. Like, the demo part in phase one is the easy part, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not saying Caserio is
failing. But doesn't that also relate
to,
instead of fighting Rex Burkheads that you've coined the beautiful phrase for, that they've gone to more younger players on short-term deals, but if they play the right way and play their cards the right way and show out, could be a part of this going forward.
No, absolutely. I mean, those are the players you need to get to phase two, right? Like, the Rex Burkheads and the Danny Amendolas, those are the guys just helping you with the demo, if we're being completely honest. But they're just filling the roster spots.
But like, to your point about when you get to the real tough part about the interior decorating, the design, those kind of things, really you're at the mercy of your quarterback right now. So you don't know, because you can't put together all of your interior decor and everything around a guy that might not be there more than a year.
But that's your decision, right? That's a phase two decision. That's the hard part, as opposed to the demo, which I think is a lot easier.
But it's not a quick decision to be made, because you've got to sit through 17 games now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, he's got to figure out what he is. He's got to figure out what he is, and that's going to be one of the hard decisions that Nick Caserio has to make. Do you ride with – because, I mean, it's going to swing the organization, like, good or bad. Like, deciding Davis Mills or deciding against Davis Mills – it's going to have a big influence for the next 3 to 5 seasons of the Houston Texans. 713-780-ESPN. If you want to weigh in, Hive, 713-780-3776. Twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. He's at Pac-Man Joel. I'm at Jeremy Branham. All right. Yesterday, the HBO Real Sports, Ashley Solis, Tony Busby. There was even a Rusty Harden associate lawyer that was there as well. What was said yesterday on HBO, and did you watch it? That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, before we go to the break, tell you about MyBookie, because it's the only place that you should be putting money down if you want to make games more interesting. We know it's a long, drawn-out Major League Baseball season, and we talk about some of these games that aren't exactly as interesting for even the biggest diehard Astro fan as they might otherwise be if it was against a big-time team or late in the season. You can make it more interesting by putting some money down, mybookie.ag, and they make it easy for you, because when you go to mybookie.ag, there's going to be a prompt for you to enter your promo codes. And promo codes and bonuses are given by putting in the promo code BET975 in this case, as it relates to us. You listen to us, you get our promo code, you use it, you reap the benefits. If you're new to MyBookie, you're going to get a first-time deposit bonus. If you're a return customer, you're going to get a return bonus. And they're going to take care of you so that you have more money in your account, more games you can bet on, more chances to win. They take care of you in so many different ways. They also make sure that your money is safe and secure, that when you win, you're going to get paid. And those are important, because sometimes at other sites, you can't get the money out that you actually have rightfully won. And when you put money in, you can't see it in your account, when you need it because they're slow to the draw in making sure that it gets to where you need it to go. Not at mybookie.ag. They take care of you every step of the way. This is just another way that they do it. They also have promotions throughout the year to where you can get involved. It doesn't cost you anything to get in, but if you win, you're going to get out money, and that's what matters. Check them out today. Like I said, go to mybookie.ag, put in that promo code BET975, reap the benefits, get the deposit, the bonuses. Also realize it's not just baseball. It's NBA playoffs, it's golf, MMA, soccer, and so much more. The main thing I tell you is you can bet anywhere, any place, anytime, but the only place to do it is always mybookie.ag.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
7322 says, if the crazy did happen and the Texans start 3-0, do you tank? And this was the, I think this is a question to the Embrace the Suck, which... The Embrace the Suck's not so much about trying to win football games. Like, you're not going to blatantly go out and Chris Brown yourself to a hooked missed field goal to get a better draft pick. Like, they're still going to go out and try to win games. It's just where the roster's at, where it's not a winning roster. But overall, like, yeah, I think you're still going to go out and try to win football games. Sure. There's nothing you're doing that's going to be tanking. We just don't think that the roster's good enough to win games.
Look, there's benefit both ways. If you catch lightning in a bottle and you start 3-0 and you're doing it in such a way that you haven't fluked into these wins, and there's reason to believe that you can get there, then you got to ride with that too. I mean, I think that for everybody's best interest, you think Lovie Smith, who knows his future rides in the balance of the next couple of years in a lot of different ways, wouldn't like to hang his hat on the fact that, hey, I got you all back chasing a playoff spot when no one, when it was doing what no one thought you could do. I mean, I think still long-term, it's in the best interest of the team to embrace the suck. But if you somehow, some way start 3-0, I'm not telling you that you should just completely intentionally trip down the stairs and fall back into the basement.
Yeah, I don't think that's not where anybody's at with the whole embrace the suck. It's just it's more from a fan perspective. Like, the Texans are going to be a 4-6 win team more than likely. Learn to embrace that and find reasons to, you know, be excited about football games on Sunday, which this year there's more than last year because you got, you know, the young pieces. You have Davis Mills, who is, you know, more of a chance to be your quarterback going forward than he was last year because we didn't know. So that's more where that comes from. 713-780-ESPN. All right, Tony Busby and his client, Ashley Solis, were on Real Sports yesterday with Greg Gumbel. Although Greg Gumbel was just taking it in and out of break. He wasn't really involved in this piece that HBO Real Sports had. Did you watch it? 713-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Did you watch the piece on HBO Real Sports about Deshaun Watson yesterday?
No, I read the articles, and we don't have HBO anyway, but with everything else going on, I read the articles, I listened to all the sound bites. I was very interested to find out, which we were questioning, whether there would be some women that we haven't heard from before or women that really want to be heard but, you know, didn't want any monetary compensation or have a case against him, and that wasn't the case. So I just paid attention to what was said and the reactions to see how that would play into whatever's going on with the ongoing Watson stuff. I think it was more of the same. It was just,
yeah,
it was more details that we've already kind of been privy to with some of the different articles Sports Illustrated and others wrote. And then it was just the emotional reactions of those that were personally involved in the altercations. And of course, they're being upset, rightfully so, with him getting the extension he got. But other than that, I think it was much ado about something we've already known about.
I don't disagree. And the reason that we're asking, did you watch, because I'm trying to take a pulse, really, of this city and this fan base on how much this is, like, entertaining is the wrong word. Like, something that you have
pertinent
to watch, right? Pertinent,
must-see
relevant.
TV.
Yeah, like, entertainment's the bad word. I want to take that back. I recant that. But how much were you invested in that HBO piece yesterday? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We'll play some audio here coming up shortly. what you said is true. I watched it this morning. There really wasn't anything new that we haven't already read, we haven't already heard. But what I do think is relevant about the fact that it was on HBO and the fact that it was on video, I think it matters that it was on video. I think it matters seeing the emotion on Ashley Solis's face, to be completely honest with you. Because if you just read the letters in a deposition, you read the reports, that's one thing. It doesn't really touch at the heartstrings. It doesn't touch at the feelings. Like Ashley Solis yesterday, and it doesn't matter really what side you're on, and you might have different opinions of this, watching her be emotional about the situation makes me think worse of Deshaun Watson, I'll be perfectly honest.
Yeah, no question about it, because you can actually put the human element into it and realize that this was more, because in a lot of these cases, there's a lot of people, rightfully so or not, that are thinking they're just in it for the money. They're just trying to get a cash grab out of all of this. But at the same time, when you see and hear the emotions that she let out in doing the interview, you realize this was a pretty significant moment in her life. This was life-altering.
Life.
Yes,
yeah.
Life-altering in the way it went down. And so it creates a different image. And as imaging relates to this case, it matters. Because the NFL is going to tell you, and the way that they wrote their player clauses in this new collective bargaining agreement, imaging matters. And if you defame the league or the image of the league and or your team and yourself, you face discipline. And that's why it comes back to Jocena Anderson's tweets about how the league is looking at this, comparing it with the Bauer situation and making sure they take their time to do it right, because they didn't do that with Ray Rice. So it all matters. And I think that from a – Brendan and I were talking about this in the break and questioning how much Texans fans really care about all this going forward. Well, they damn well should, because – as it relates to how the league handles this, it could have a significant impact on the picks you got from the Browns, where they fall, and how what kind of players you can get in return for the trade.
Look, those are two conversations
yes.
to me, and one definitely does affect the other. Like, let's be honest, it one of that the one angle of that conversation definitely plays into the other angle of the conversation. But there's also like the human conversation
sure.
versus the sports conversation.
Absolutely.
And Dr. Dre, I think, sums it up really, really well. Twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. The Ashley Solis part was painful to see, because if that's my daughter and it's being dismissed by the NFL and others, is downright disgusting.
Yep.
See, that's what I felt watching this on the HBO. It was like seeing Solis, seeing her disgust, seeing how much she's hurt by this. That's hard to pick up in letters and depositions and just words on a piece of paper. Seeing that emotion, I think, did get the attention of the NFL. It got my attention.
And you make a great point, Jeremy, and I don't want to ever try and blur the lines. This is definitely two conversations. Is it must-see TV for Texans fans? Sure. With a sports interest. But also, because this is like the days of our lives. This is the soap opera we've lived and followed daily for like almost a year now or more. So you care about the people involved. You want to see and put faces and names and voices with the elements that you've already heard that have been brought to light. And then you want to see if there's other details you haven't quite heard of yet. Because at the end of the day, one of the takeaways is going to be, again, as it relates to other cases the NFL has had to deal with recently, how much of a pedestal are we putting these players on? How much do they think they can get away with, and have they gotten away with in the past? Because we think about the Ray Rice situation, and there wasn't video, we were told. And the league passed judgment quickly. But now, because then later when the video came out, they realized the punishment should have been longer and stronger, and then the question started to arise about, was the league sitting on this all along? You want to make sure that these women got their just due, that they got a fair shake, that they were listened to and heard from as human beings, not as it relates to a sports case.
Yeah, this dude is disgusting. Like, I'll be honest with you. He's just laying on the massage table, just exposing himself to these ladies. Like, he's telling them to, like, you know, massage certain, like, areas so he could put himself, we know what I'm talking about, on their hand. Like, Ashley Solis was crying, and Deshaun Watson admitted to it. Like, I understand from, like, a legal perspective that it is a very difficult thing to prove criminally. And that's why he got no build in Harris County. It's why he got no build in Brazoria County. I really think if it goes to civil case, though, I think there's enough there where he would have to pay out that civil case. So I'm really curious to see if this is something that eventually gets settled, although the settlements talks have seemingly stopped. Also, like, one of the other takeaways I had from watching this was Jimmy Haslam, who is the owner of the Browns.
Yep.
He's also the chairman of Pilot Flying J, that truck stop. they didn't reach out to the accusers. Sola said that, no, that didn't happen. Busby said that he didn't talk to any of them as well. HBO said that he hired a couple of private investigators that I think basically wanted – that told him what he wanted to hear. And watching Jimmy Haslam, like, use his wife as a plant during that press conference, hey, honey, I need a woman up here to sit by my side as I try to defend this pervert, this freak, Deshaun Watson, that made me very uncomfortable.
He's a POS because of the fact that he intentionally circumvented what was going on to try and do a guy that's not so solid a solid by trying to save him money. You know, the fact that they gave him his extension and did it in such a way so that they could assure him that he really wasn't going to face the punishment that he deserves to face if indeed he's found guilty and only have to make $1 million this year, so whatever fines levied and suspensions given by the league don't affect his pocketbook too much, and he can still rake in all that cash starting with the extension and the new years of the deal. That was absolute BS. The league should be pissed off beyond belief, and for no other reason, the league should consider a carryover suspension that really has an impact on the next two seasons so that he can't get away with it financially.
We'll take your reaction on this. We'll also get to some of the audio on the other side, some of the best things of what they had to say on this HBO documentary, not documentary, the real sports piece yesterday on Deshaun Watson. 713-780-ESPN if you want to get in here. 713-780-3776. We'll do it on the other side. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
713-780-ESPN. 1194 says, if Richard is assuming he's guilty, what's the point of the grand jury? See, guilt can be two different things, right? To me, there's guilt in terms of like the criminal sense and the legal sense. It's impossible to prove guilt in this case. That's why he got no bill in two different counties, Harris and Brazoria. But at the very least, the dude's a serial pervert and a serial sexual assaulter, right? Like, he's admitted to having sexual relations with three different women, three of the 22 he admitted to having sexual relations with. The other women, Ashley Solis was one of them. I can't remember the other name that was on HBO yesterday. He talked about how he exposed himself. He was trying to put his whatever on their hands and their bodies. Ashley Solis was crying and froze up because she couldn't go along with it. And Deshaun Watson admitted to making Ashley Solis cry and checking in with her after the fact, asking if she was okay. Like, Deshaun Watson
also,
is a sick human being.
Deshaun Watson referenced when reaching out to Ashley Solis when he found out she was crying, but basically almost indirectly threatened her to say, you know what? You have a career to worry about.
Right.
So do I. It's like, basically, that's indirectly admitting guilt, too. Because you're basically saying, if this gets out, it would be detrimental to me. I can make things detrimental to you. So therefore, it's in your best interest to leave it alone. And that's, in my mind, as much as anything else, part of the incrimination, no matter what we hear about in the court of law, where this thing settles out or if it does. And I do firmly believe Ashley Solis is one of the victims that is going to ride this thing out to the bitter end, because I do feel like she's that emotionally invested in it, regardless of the fact that we don't know a majority of the other 22. And I think rightfully so, because you can feel the emotion when you hear her words. You can see it in her face, as you mentioned. You know that this is more than just being one of Tony Busby's clients and trying to get a financial settlement. So it also sheds a hell of a lot of light on Deshaun Watson that I think that the league, to some degree, with when you hear some of the stories about the way that their people that represent the league were doing their interviews and how the women were treated when they were conducting their interviews, to the fact that it was a highly publicized event, the trade, the extension, the fact that he's practicing, the fact that he's doing all these things as if nothing ever happened, it's disturbing in a lot of ways. And I think that a lot of people are sitting there kind of with vested interest in saying, this guy deserves to pay in some way.
That clip that you mentioned, I want to play that. Tony Busby and Ashley Solis talking about how the NFL investigators didn't really get a great vibe off of them.
I thought that they were serious, that they were going to like, okay, you know, we're going to take these things seriously.
Tony Busby is the attorney for all 22 women suing Deshaun Watson. Busby says that he made a number of the women available for interviews with NFL investigators last spring until he began to believe that the league wasn't interested in what they had to say.
It wasn't a fact-finding situation. It wasn't that at all.
You don't think they were trying to find out the truth of what happened?
think they were doing it because they were expected to.
I think that they had that interview with me or investigation with me for the sake of saying that they did something.
It's kind of disturbing.
I really hope that.
That's why I think this HBO special on Deshaun is going, like, it's something that the NFL watched. It's something that the NFL had their eyes on. And the fact that you have Tony Busby, and look, he could be lying through his teeth. The fact that you had Tony Busby say that he didn't feel like it was a fact-finding mission, and you had Ashley Solis, one of the 22 victims in all of this, and one of the 22 accusers in all of this, saying that they didn't really want to find out the truth, that caught the attention of the NFL, I guarantee it.
It should, and it should be instead of monitoring the day after by seeing how media outlets and everybody else responds to what they saw. They should be focused on being out in front of this thing and basically being more transparent in terms of who did the interviews and what they asked and what they're, you know, and the fact that it was a fact-finding mission and trying to at least give people reason to believe that Busby may have been fudging a little bit, reason to believe that they were doing it for the right reasons. Because if they don't and they just sit on it and they're trying to judge the court of public opinion, they are going to get penalized. And they are going to be guilty because of the fact that this is not one that they can continue to handle like they've done handling cases in the past where they end up going light or they end up slow rolling it and slow playing it. And then at a certain point, just feeling like they had to do something, but they didn't have to do all that much to make their player look worse. Everyone's watching this one, and this one is one that they have to play outright, and they haven't so far.
So HBO reached out to Rusty Hardin whenever they were going to run this and the buildup of, you know, putting it together and producing the whole piece. And the representation of Deshaun Watson, Rusty Hardin, and his colleagues, they did not want to be a part of it. Watson obviously was not a part of it. Rusty Hardin was not a part of it. They didn't want any involvement in it. And Greg Gumbel telling us after the piece ran that at the 11th hour that Rusty Hardin had one of his associate attorneys, one of his co-workers, that they did want to tell their side of the story. So you had the little Zoom Q&A following the actual piece. Some of that audio here, and I thought it was a great question by HBO's side of it. Why believe Deshaun Watson over 22 women?
Well, I think there's two answers to that. First, it's 22 women. It's one lawyer. There's only one lawyer who was willing to take these cases. And as we know from Ashley Solis's deposition, Mr. Busby was not the first, probably not even the second or third lawyer that she went to. But he was the only one to take her case. Why? Not because it had merit, but because he would use these cases to increase his social media following and, quite frankly, to get on shows like this one. And when we start looking into how did we get to 22, I think that's a very valid question. And I would argue that the inquiry should be focused on Mr. Busby's conduct, not Deshaun's. Because when you start looking into how we got to 22 cases, he went on social media immediately to create vague statements, vague allegations about behavior that needed to be stopped, and then solicited clients to say, call me. And they did.
22 women is 22 women to me. That's a lot of fluff. I still hear 22 women have claims against Deshaun Watson for sexual misconduct.
I can see where they're trying to steer it. I understand right. The points they're trying to make.
The legal game, sure.
Yeah, and I think that what we've said all along, too, is that 22 seems to be excessive, and I don't think they all have the same kind of a case as Ashley Solis. But all it takes is one, and it seems like there's definitely one, if not a couple, in which this is really a bigger deal than just some, you know, fringe woman that thinks she might have been, you know, part of this. But at the end of the day, because she is associated with it, she could possibly cash out on it. I think there's different levels of in terms of the emotional distress it's put on these women and the physical abuse that they faced. But I believe that they're all real. I also find it ironic that instead of Rusty talking, that at the last minute, his associate that talked on camera was a female. Because I think that it was there's a lot of positioning. Because I don't disagree with the fact, too, that the fact on the other side, I don't disagree with the fact that Busby was all about Busby. He always has been. And I believe that he was trying to get as much attention for himself as he could get, too. But I think that he also has a case in a couple of these women that actually they need to be handled by someone that has their best interest at heart.
See, I think that that could be – look, I don't disagree a whole lot. I feel like that could have been something that Busby could play. But Solis did come to him eventually, right? So this wasn't Busby finding Solis. Like, maybe Busby wasn't the first, second, third choice for Solis, but she got to him. He didn't get to her. And then as you're building the case, you're going to find more women who are involved as well. Another one from Watson.
Wait, Jerry, before you move on, just one other quick point too, though. In the fact that she found him – it would have been a lot more difficult in terms of getting attention for her in this case if she had just took a lawyer off the street that has an office in the strip center around the corner. The fact that he had dealt with bigger nationally covered cases, he carries the name for himself, but he also carries experience in dealing with that, the offshore oil rig incident, where he was dealing with multiple different people that had multiple cases in the same situation that was – had a lot of national media attention and local. I think that that also lended itself to someone that she should work with because it would bring attention to the case itself.
And we don't know the prices too, right? Like there's always the other side of that conversation. The first couple of lawyers that she might have been going to might have had a retainer of $100,000 that she could not afford, as opposed to Busby. No retainer right now. I'll just take a cut of your winnings. So like there's a huge other part of that conversation that could come into play with Solis finding representation. Here's another one from Watson's attorney about Watson testifying that the women initiated sexual conduct with him.
Well, in every massage, I will tell you, he did go intending just for a professional massage. In only those three instances where sexual conduct occurred, consensual sexual activity, it occurred after the massage session had ended. And Mr. Watson has testified and is insistent that that sexual activity was initiated by the plaintiff in every single instance.
That cut's so bizarre to me because it's only three of the hundreds of massages that he's giving all the time. So, yeah, he admits to having sexual relations during these massages. Also, the attorney saying it was after all of the massages took place. Well, no crap, it was after the massages took place. You're not doing it during the massage. Like, that was such weird wording to me from Watson's attorney.
But in order to get from point A to point B during the massage, certain things were happening too. And that's been documented by multiple women in multiple different outlets, trying to let you know some of the details that Watson's side does not want to get out.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. 6253, and I feel sorry for Solis. 6253 asking us a question. I'm absolutely not defending Watson, but didn't Watson make things immensely more difficult on himself by answering the questions that he did, and I guess being honest to some extent? This is where like the legal game comes into play, because while the criminal cases were still going on, it was I plead the fifth, because you're not going to like tarnish your own case by answering questions honestly while there's still criminal cases that could charge you. But as soon as the criminal cases got no build in Brazoria and Harris County, that's when you want to start to be more open in the depositions, and that's when Watson became a little bit more open in the depositions that he was having with Busby. So that's kind of the legal game, which is always kind of the crap part of it, to be honest with you. I hate the legal game because it's basically who can prove it better, not actually what happened. But I think the fact that Ashley Solis, we got to see her on video for the second time. She was at that press conference. But to see her in this setting, I think it caught it caught my attention. I think it caught the attention of like people that are involved and have thought about this case. And I think it caught the attention of the league offices as well.
I think it resurrected people's feelings, Jeremy, more so than anything else. Yeah, I think that a lot of people, because he was traded, because it's not Houston's problem anymore, because nationally it's died down in terms of the attention it's getting on a daily basis and the news outlets that are caring about it, I think this resurrected a whole lot of feelings. It resurrected a whole lot of interest. It had a whole lot of people paying attention yet again and now waiting this thing out to see how it's going to play out for the long haul. That's why the league has to be very concerned. That's why the league has to pay more attention maybe than even they were paying it previously, as was indicated by the way that Busby and Solis talked about how they were interviewed. I believe that this is going to play out by making the NFL take more time. I believe that they are going to pay more attention now to this, just like it relates to Jacina Anderson's tweets about them paying attention to Trevor Bauer in baseball. And because they are so hyper-focused all the time on image and how it affects everybody involved, owners and bottom lines and things like that, this is going to be why they're going to slow the process down a little bit and be hyper careful in the way they make their decision.
Yeah, to the texter's point, too, remember Deshaun came out right out of the gate. Oh, yeah, I'm innocent. I didn't do any of these things. My mom and grandma and my aunt raised me better than this. I would never harm a woman, yet he's having three sexual relations, cheating on his girlfriend, with masseuses, and then he's making them cry, and now he has 22 women that are sexual misconduct. So it's all, Deshaun lying through his teeth. 713-780-ESPN. When we come back, Brendan complaining about getting old. What in the world is he talking about? Next, Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.